And coming up next on Free Radio, it's the Sunday, June 6th edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. Stay tuned.
Also, a DJ at Free Radio Santa Cruz has a show, and I'll let him explain all about that when he gets out here if he wants to. Are you ready? My longtime friend, a hell of a witch, a very good witch. Feel free.
Look at the professional assistance I got here. Is that better? Thank you. David Robitz, thank you. When I first came into Santa Cruz, I was just passing through. Been about 10 years, I guess. I stopped for a mocha, I think it was a Pergolesi. I didn't have a whole lot of possessions. I had a guitar and everything would fit in my broken down piece of truck. And this one song, it's called Peace Name. Quit talking, Bob, I hear you over here.
Once knew a man who wandered place to place. Never seemed tired or hungry, smile upon his face. Asked him why he was so happy, how life could be so good. Told me his philosophy, the things for which he stood. Love is my law and truth is my religion. Share with those less fortunate everything I'm given. Won't be sold to slavery, won't be beaten down. Keep my head up in the clouds, feet upon the ground. Whenever I see a wrong, try to set it right. Against a strong adversary, wage peaceful fights. Always try to speak the truth, say what I mean. My spirit is my guiding light, I'll follow in my dreams. All the time I knew him, he always seemed so free. Never harmed a living thing, spoke so peacefully. Always spoke from his heart, never told me lies. When he looked upon another, love was in his eyes. Love is my law and truth is my religion. Share with those less fortunate everything I'm given. Won't be sold to slavery, won't be beaten down. Keep my head up in the clouds, feet upon the ground. One day I went to see him, found that he was gone, leaving behind his few belongings, he had just moved on. Never said where he was going, somehow I knew he had gone wherever his dreams led him to. Love is my law and truth is my religion. Share with those less fortunate everything I'm given. Won't be sold to slavery, won't be beaten down. Keep my head up in the clouds, feet upon the ground. clouds, feet upon the ground.
Thank you. Well, it sounds okay out there.
It sounds... It sounds okay to me. Do we have a mic operational? I don't think we do. Are we there? Are we live? Hello?
President Bush made a very special thing happen for me. He declared war, before he declared war on the Muslims, he declared war on people of my religion. I'm a witch, been a witch my whole life. And before he even became president, he said that my people didn't have the right to exist. This is a Christian country, and we are anti-God, in his opinion. And gave me a whole new batch of songs to break out that are now political again. And this song was written by Charlie Murphy, and it's called The Burning.
And we'll hear that song in a minute. Of course, you've heard me, a little of me wandering around the studio trying to figure out which button to push. But I figured it out, and indeed, we're on the air. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 it was, 101.1 it is. We've had a shift in the last month, and we're in spacious new quarters right under the Pogonip. I'm not supposed to tell where we are. Okay, sorry about that. And that's a crib from the V-Man. You can also catch us on www.freakradio.org. I'm Bathrob Spear, Robert Norris. This is a 3.5 hour show, which you can catch, I guess 3.25 hour show, which you can catch most of this morning. We've got special guest Tad, Arcata homeless activist, coming on at 10:30. We have a safe singer in the studio who will be tuning up her guitar. Maybe it's even tuned up, and we'll be playing shortly a couple of We Love the Sleeping Band songs. I think she's been composing them. And SAFE is an event which happens every... Well, it's an organization, but it's an event which also... it's an event sponsored by SAFE, which happens every Wednesday at 6 o'clock in front of New Leaf Market. It's a sing-along, strum-along, sometimes a slurp-along with soup, and also there are tables for various... homeless civil rights. One homeless civil rights group, anti-war groups. We actually invite any groups to come on down and help reclaim public spaces on the downtown Santa Cruz sidewalks, which have been preempted by the downtown ordinances, the mislabeled hosts, who are actually, some of us call them the pests. There are folks who walk around in little uniforms, supposedly to be helpful to tourists, but actually engaged in regularly harassing and making unpleasant the scene for those who are poor, and who attempt to do such criminal things as sit down within 14 feet of a building or set up a table within 10 feet of a building, kiosk, bench, telephone, water fountain, you name it. In other words, most of the sidewalk has been ruled a kind of a free fire zone. The police department has the right to come in and hassle people, and the hosts are kind of the advance guard of the police department. If you see harassment happening, or if you have been a victim of this kind of harassment, I encourage you to call this show at 427-3772. It's important to get the word out, because a lot of people feel they are alone and somehow they are to blame, or at least that they're powerless, and that really means that silence and sort of keeping a low profile or just disappearing entirely is the best solution. And that is not, I believe, the best solution. The best solution is to stand up, raise our voices, and reclaim spaces that need to be public spaces. Maybe I should talk with my guest a little bit about this situation. She's been out on the sidewalk. In the studio with me is Valerie Christie, who's been you've been with SAFE kind of since the beginning, haven't you? Or since at least the first strum along?
I've been to everyone.
Everyone.
Oh yeah,
that's a better record.
18th than one last week.
18th. I was always wondering. I'm not really sure. You're sure it's 18?
Well, I've counted them all on the calendar.
So now we can drink. Is that the idea?
Yeah, I guess so. Okay.
And you play the guitar, and tell us a little bit about the SAFE event. For those who don't know, probably many of the people who listen to the show do know, but there's some people actually listening from as far away as Norway. I actually got an email yesterday from Harmony in Norway, who may be calling in today. He said he might. He's a former Santa Cruzan, I guess, because he speaks about Santa Cruz a bit. What's this SAFE event all about? Describe it for me.
Well, from my interpretation, it seems to be a support to the street musicians. There's some pretty strict ordinances going down now where you can't stand certain places and so many distance away from certain spots, like what do they call it, kiosks or buildings, or and then it's got to where there's very limited certain places you can stand, and people are feeling so pressured that they don't even want to play on the mall.
Now, is that really true? I mean, I've seen musicians play at different times and places on the mall. There's some who say this is sort of a paranoid fantasy by some publicity-grabbing activists, or maybe a paranoid reaction by some oversensitive musicians. What do you think?
Well, my personal experience has been that I hesitated to even try because I didn't know where to play. I didn't know what the ordinances were, first of all, and so you never know where you're going to get a ticket or be bothered.
There's a handy-dandy pamphlet in the hosts, that's the Downtown Informant Center, right next to the Del Mar Theater.
I didn't know anything about it.
Well, didn't we have friendly hosts in there? And what about Pam Bachtel, the friendly CSO officer? Didn't she inform you as to what your, permissible playing places were?
When she did, she actually turned out to be telling me things that were lies, which was shocking to me. I found that out later after I was informed of what the rules were.
Wait a minute, you mean you believe some... How did you learn they were a lie? Did you go to the law? Did you take the word from some questionably biased activist?
Well, actually, I was handed a slip or a piece of paper that had the ordinances on it and checked them out myself. So I thought they were ridiculous. They're so detailed and long. I mean, it's 2 pages long. It's ridiculous, but...
2 pages double-sided.
Oh, God. This is boring. But I think the thing to do is just to respect people's space, but instead we're just getting hassled by people. Stay there for a certain amount of time is a respectful thing, but to be hassled by the cops to get ticketed just because they want to create certain ordinances seems like a bother.
Being the devil's advocate, Valerie, there are those who would say that, there aren't very many tickets given to musicians for playing within 10 feet of a building or excessive noise that I've heard about. Although, again, I don't, a lot of musicians are independent souls and they don't call the Huff Line, which I encourage all you listeners to do if you get a ticket or warned or hassled or see this happening, 423 Huff, H-U-F-F, 423-4833. But nonetheless, from the reports I've heard, mostly, musicians are just, they're continuing to play or there's not that many tickets, is what I'm saying. So should that lead us to believe that possibly, this is an over-amped issue?
I guess it just depends on people's personal interpretations. Mike True, who started SAFE, he was actually arrested for the ridiculous thing of setting up his CD and sharing it with other people, which I think is something that people should be able to do. He actually was able to win that, but it's like that's kind of an uncomfortable thing to be hassled for that. I also happy you brought up Huff, because I think that SAFE is also supporting the people on the streets who are having difficulty just being there. They're being hassled all the time, and I think that SAFE is really important to be supporting the idea of poor people in general. I mean, obviously, if you're playing on the mall, sometimes you're doing it because you want to make a few bucks. You're a poor person yourself, so you relate to that, and it's nice to be able to, soup comes in from Huff, supporting the poor people, and it feels really good to be supporting them and to bring our community together and knowing that they are community also, which I think is important to say.
We got a call. Let's hear it. Maybe get some to join this discussion.
Oh, wow.
Hi, you're on Free Radio with Valerie and Robert.
Hey, Robert. This is Ray calling.
Hey,
I'm sorry, too. I just just grab the phone real quick. I was downtown. I wanted to give you a little update on the preparations for the parade in case you hadn't heard.
Oh, what, again, yeah, I haven't heard it. And what parade are we talking about?
Well, you know, they're having the Gay Day celebration downtown.
Oh, boy. Okay.
And, of course, so they cordoned everything off and they put up signs, no parking, no parking here and there. So, of course, a vehicle abatement people, the cops, and a troop of tow trucks are down there impounding people's vehicles. And this gentleman pulls up to the Palomar to pick up his elderly mother, who's on, she's on the dole. They don't have any money. And he's a wage slave. He goes up there to grab her, and when he comes out, they've hooked up his car. And guess what? It's $300 to get your car back. He doesn't have $300. He says if he doesn't get his car back, he can't go to work. He's going to lose his car unless somebody comes to his assistance, and, you know, he has some real fortunate luck over the next few hours. Anyway, he goes off ranting and raging and screaming and swearing and all that kind of stuff that I can't, you know, I don't blame him. But just wanted to let you know that the people in blue are out there making the streets safe for the gay revelers. And not that I have any problem with gay reveling, but if it's going to create tyranny on the common person, then I do have a problem with it.
I don't
especially
think that
when
the,
it comes to...
you know, Ray, I don't think that the gay paraders are up for towing elderly vehicles of elderly people picking up, you know, folks from the Palomar. I suspect that that is probably initiative by our fine SCPD itself.
Oh yeah, and you know the ladies, the two light blue shirt younger women, I forget their names, but you know they were actually scoffing. You know, like, you know, well, I don't care if they can't read the sign. It's not my car. I don't care. That's what they're saying. And meanwhile, this, like I said, this guy, he is actually jumping up and down. This is the kind of man who is going to, you know, eventually maybe go home and get a gun. Maybe he's going to go home and grab a tractor and put some armor plating on it. You know, I mean, how far can you push a populace? And $300 to have your car towed to an impound lot? Now, I have to say, they were towing other vehicles, too. And, you know, the other couple people came running out of Noah's, you know, what are you doing? You got my vehicle. You know, and they're like, well, do you have money? If you have money, we'll drop it right now for $200.
Wow. A little kind of extortion on the streets.
That's
I love
totally
it.
Extortion.
It sounds like Guatemala or Mexico, man. I think we're, you know, we're taking on a third world cast. Maybe that's kind of part of the celebration today. Let's go third world.
Well, you know, all I know, you know, is it's disgusting to me, you know, and most of the people, they just sit around and they either, you know, smirk or smile, and, you know, nobody calls these cops on it, well, except for me. You know, I told them they were extortionist thugs, and someday somebody will come for their vehicle. But, I mean, you know, what's going on in Santa Cruz, man? You know, I saw Animal Farm last night. Great movie to see again, the new redone version.
It's a cartoon movie about, done by... A book based by written by George Orwell about essentially it's a satire on the Soviet Union.
But I mean, you know, I don't know. People are dumbed down, they're brainwashed, and they're just allowing themselves to be, you know, turned into you know, fuel for the machine. And I hope that, you know, I hope that this guy calms down and doesn't do anything really rash. And I hope he can come up with the money to get his vehicle back. You know, and I also hope him and all the rest of those people that lost their vehicles today, you know, think really long and hard about the police state in which they live in.
Hey, well, you certainly, you know, put it out there, Ray, and I encourage people who have lost their vehicles or seen this happening, give a call in. Maybe we can give a call from those who feel the police are doing a fine job in towing these vehicles so we can maintain a certain balance here on the station.
$300. I mean, I worked as a tow guy. $300 for this might maybe take these guys 45 minutes to pick up a car, tow it over to the yard, and drop it. You know?
Yeah, but they have to endure the insults and abuse from scoundrels like yourself, Ray.
Maybe they can find a more creative way to make a living.
Yeah, but
anyway, I got to get to work, so carry on, and maybe I'll talk to you later.
Don't park your car in front of the Palomar.
Oh, I gave up cars years ago.
Well, see, that's it. It's a way of getting people to get out of their vehicles. That's it. That's what we're doing.
Well, that's definitely part of it, but I mean, you know, they're not helping the community, and, you know, who knows? This guy and his mom, I mean, he's just trying to do a good thing for his mom on a Sunday.
Well, maybe he should be in church instead of running around in a car. I mean, there might be a lesson for us here.
He was taking his mother to church, you know?
You know,
I didn't get to talk to him because he was too irate. He was screaming up and down. The cops were like, you know, either you shut up and leave or you go to jail. And he took off running down the street.
Wow. You've taken all my words away, Ray. I'm afraid we're going to have to find some way to shut you up and...
Okay, well, I'll get off the air. Keep up the good work. I'll see you later.
Hey, thank you. But that there is no way to shut Ray up, apparently, and I'm glad, because it's voices like that that at least keep us informed of what's actually happening right under our own noses. We have another call. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Valerie.
Hey, instead of hypothesizing about how good this guy that's screaming at the cops is, why don't we hypothesize about how bad he is?
Okay, go ahead.
Because, you know, maybe he just got done beating up his mom and raping his wife last night because of the dyke march that he didn't agree with. And maybe he parked in front of the Palomar knowing that he could get towed and decided to just chance it.
He also could be a terrorist, kind of readying for an attack on the gay parade.
Or he could just be a rich motherfucker that can afford $300 but wants to have a little temper tantrum.
That's true. That could be, but... So your point, caller, is that perhaps we should be less sympathetic to those parking their vehicles that are being ticketed and towed away?
I do, because I hate cars.
Uh-huh.
I totally hate cars. I hate oil, and I hate cars. My brother just got hit by an SUV.
Wow.
The person driving the SUV, he was on a bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
The person driving the SUV was taken away in handcuffs, and just never saw him. Never saw him in her big fat fucking tank.
Well, at least they took
down.
Away the person. I mean, I know people who've been hit and run, and they don't. You never hear about any kind of prosecutions. Those who may not remember James May, son was hit and run up in Scotts Valley, Felton area about a week ago, and I'm not quite sure what the disposition of that. I mean, cars are lethal weapons. I use one.
But yours is a low riding. Bumper sticker covered piece of caca.
Yeah, that's
car,
the one,
right?
Man.
It's not like a fucking big old SUV.
No, it's an old. Yeah, I mean it actually gets pretty good mileage, but it does use gas, and
yes.
It's one of those things you get addicted to. You get habituated to, if not addicted to. But I don't know if the answer is to. There are some people who need cars to go to work at the current time, given the state of mass transit. At least that's the way it looks. And it's like talking about saving our clean, pristine green belt, and at the same time getting rid of all the poor people in the area because you don't want to allow any more development. There's a kind of a conflict that develops there, but I don't know. I mean,
people need cars. You're right, and he could have been a real good guy. But usually my experience is. Usually people that lose their temper like that are not really nice people to begin with.
What the fuck do you mean by that, man?
Well, Robert, I think when you were arrested by the police, you probably were talking a lot of shit, but you weren't flipping out, screaming, jumping up and down.
Well, that's true, but remember that most people don't know what to do when they're confronted by the police. I've been in dozens of interactions with the police, and I've had time to think it all over. I devote a lot of energy to figuring out what am I going to do when Sergeant Baker takes me next time. And it's most people have got other better things to do with their lives and their time and that kind of reflection.
I mean, even Mr. Argue didn't jump up and down and start screaming, dude. He just punched.
Well, of course, he didn't punch when he was taken by the police. He tried to save someone else who was being taken by the police.
Right, yeah. They were stealing away the child from
a
woman.
Right, Juliana and her child. That was back in 1999 during the anti-war protest.
Right. But, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't know. I just really don't have very much sympathy for this guy. And we had some weird phone call that I heard about at Free Radio.
Oh, really?
That there was a guy talking about killing all those different, races and... women. I mean, he was just like not saying nice things.
Were his initials GWB by any chance?
They could have been. They could have been, and he might have been just an idiot. Just like our president.
Well, remember, there are a lot of people who are frustrated by the way things are running generally, by the fact that their rents are going sky high, and they're running into all kinds of domestic problems in their own lives, and they can't get a job, or the boss is treating them like a piece of shit. I guess it's unnatural in a way, but it's certainly something that happens a lot. Maybe it's a conditioned response for people to turn on each other,
Oh, yeah.
Boss kicks you, you go home and kick your partner, your partner kicks the dog, I don't know what the dog does.
Bites the cat.
Howls and hides under the table or something.
Yeah, totally. I got to start getting ready to go off to my own slave wage job.
You use your car now.
I won't.
Okay.
I don't own one.
All right. I just want to make...
I really don't like cars.
I'm going to jump up and down and start screaming if I see you in a vehicle. Okay?
I wish everyone was riding bicycles. I wish everyone was on bikes. And those who cannot ride bikes, I wish we had burly carts, or like they do downtown, the TEDx has those little carts that you can carry people around in. I just really, you know, that and solar train transportation town to town. But, you know, I live in a utopia where women are able to love women and men are able to love men, and there aren't people jumping up and down and screaming. But, of course, there aren't cops taking people's property either. So.
Maybe we need a sign at the head of the gay parade that says, you know, because I'm sympathetic with individuals who are being harassed by the police. You know, even if the police are taking your vehicle, which I suppose you might say, I don't think that's going to discourage that person from using a vehicle, per se.
I think you're right.
You know, I think it's just going to mean he'll feel more angry toward the police, he'll feel more upset in his own life, and he'll find it more difficult to proceed, you know, just
but
because
of
the
financial
stuff.
But, you know, like, police do shit like rape people that are gay just because they're fucking fucked up in the head already, a lot of police officers.
You know of any actual instances where that's happened?
I have a book that I was reading that has numerous instances of people being raped by police officers.
Name of the book?
It's called, oh my God, I have to go look at it. Hold on for just 1 second.
Okay. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. You can call in, or you can try emailing rnorse@hotmail.com. In the studio with me is SAFE performer, Society for Artistic Freedom.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Performer Valerie, and I'm Robert. Go ahead, caller.
It's called Emotionally Involved. It's written by Rebecca Campbell, and basically the book is on the impact of researching rape. So it's about her research assistants and how they were impacted by researching rape. But they researched rape by talking to different victims, and there's numerous stories of women who were raped by police officers. And most of the time, when it happens in this book, when they talk about it, it's women who were prostitutes or who were in some form of sex industry and were raped, and then the cops just have no respect for them.
And again, the author is
Rebecca Campbell.
So
it's an excellent book.
Maybe
it's really
library.
Heavy reading. If people don't want to read about really fucked up rapes, I don't recommend this book, you know, because there are really fucked up rapes in here. Things that you just don't believe could happen. People like you that would have been dead and don't even get justice in the justice system, even when they live.
Now, you have a talk show yourself, right?
I have a show, but right now I'm taking a hiatus from it, and I don't have a time.
Uh-huh. Okay. So if people want this book, it might be in the library, or if it's not, you can probably secure it through interlibrary loan, which means you put in a request for the book. It takes about 2 or 3 months, and you get a copy. The book comes from Hoboken, New Jersey, or someplace, and they'll send it to you. It's really a great service. You can get almost any book you know.
Really?
Out of print books, rare books, you name it. You get books. That's Emotionally
Thank
Involved,
you.
Rebecca Campbell. I can't, you know that you've been reading the book. I've never read it. I just wanted to pass people onto the source.
It's not really anything on topic except for, you know, there are women that are poor that get raped too.
Well,
okay.
Sounds good. Let you go.
Okay, bye.
All righty. Bye-bye. Well, call in. Actually, I was going to ask that last caller who's expressed concerns in the past when we talk about the homeless, about talking about homeless women and the situation for women who are homeless outside, their vulnerability to rape, harassment, abuse, exploitation. Valerie, you were homeless for a number of years outside. Any comments on that situation?
Well, I've never experienced anything like that. It was in the early 80s. It was really quite cool downtown. I heard of a lot of rapes recently, or attempted rapes in parking lots around this area of Santa Cruz, but I haven't experienced anything. Or seen it myself.
And we have a caller. Hi, you're on the air with Valerie and Robert.
Yeah, Robert, this is Ray calling back. And,
hey.
You know, I just didn't want to be misunderstood. I mean, you know me, I ride a bicycle. I am against car culture as much as anybody in this town. Mm-hmm. But my point is, specifically, it's the tyranny of the state and how it's continuing to be increased upon us, you know, as citizens. And whether it's cars or whether it's bicycles or whether it's musicians, it's the fact that these thugs just continue to come in and fuck with people, charge them money, and ruin their lives. You know, that's my point.
It's also a form of humiliation and disempowerment. Even if, I mean, I know I was stopped by the police in Capitola for a light that was, I don't have a back light. It's somewhat crunched, but it's covered up illegally with red transparent tape, and I was told by the Highway Patrol that was okay. Not the Capitola Police. They've given me 2 tickets for it. But worse than that, which is just, you know, an annoyance, is the manner in which police treat you when they stop you. They take away your dignity, they take away your power, and they do so under the pretext of officer safety. And that is, you know, it's part of, to me, that's the most glaring and evident aspect of kind of fascist stuff that we're enduring. You might not call it fascist in the sense that they're enforcing laws, but the laws are so loosely written and they enforce them with such personal, you know, they make their own choices, that it has the patina of a kind of a fascism to it.
Right, and that's why I think that, you know, as citizens, you know, we should be, you know, yelling at the cops when we see them harassing other people. And when we're harassed ourselves, I mean, you know, personally, I wouldn't yell because I've had them kick the shit out of me on numerous occasions. But, I mean, a lot of people who've never run across the cops, and eventually they do, and they find themselves in that situation that you stated before, you know, they really don't know what to do, and they really do find themselves outside of their comfort zone. So I just wanted to add that and make sure that I, you know, redefine my position on that.
Sure.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Talk to you later.
All righty. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. The original question I asked Valerie here, who's going to be playing a song or two, she's got her guitar with her, is what about the actual SAFE event? I mean, I kind of refer to it as a Wednesday event, which happens 6 to 9 in front of New Leaf Market downtown Santa Cruz. But what goes on there? How does it give us a kind of a flavor of what's it all about? I mean, you've been to all 18 events?
Mm-hmm. Well, for me now, it's become an event of celebrating each other, taking back the streets, because the streets, you know, where we are is actually kind of illegal spot. It's not exactly 10 feet from one thing and not exactly 14 feet from another, or whatever they expect from us. I never did memorize it. But and we're there for more than an hour, and we are having basically a party on the streets. It's like an open mic. People come down. Anyone who wants to come and play together and sing along, or play on their own. And, you know, of course, we're giving people soup and passing out pamphlets and having people sign petitions or whatever to spread the word about what's going on that people might not know about. And it just feels like Santa Cruz again, community, and, you know, what we all, a lot of us have felt has been missing from Santa Cruz, the feeling of people enjoying themselves on the street and group getting together and having a good time. And I've missed that so much and feel like that's happening again. So it's exciting for me to do. We get really like a big party. We really whoop it up out there sometimes, and nobody's been hassling us at all, which perhaps it's because it's a group of us, and that helps. I don't know. Also, I don't think we're making any bad feelings, you know. People are feeling good about what we're doing, so that's good, too.
Yeah, the place where this is happening is right outside New Leaf Market, next to the fenced-off area that actually I was arrested at 2.5 years ago when I set up a table to petition to make sure that fence didn't go up. That was when the kiosks were run by different folks. There was Alibaba of Alibaba's Cafe and Matisse Selman of Sushi Now. Now it's in Sushi Now's place is Alfresco's, right in front of New Leaf Market, run by Marilyn. And Dave runs Cafe Campesino. And they've both been tolerant, if not friendly, to our music, even though, you know, it does put a certain stress, particularly on Marilyn, who's kind of surrounded by musicians, not just on Wednesday nights, but a lot of the other time. There's a cellist there next to her stand, and there are people on, because spaces are so constricted as far as playing, this is one of the problems with this whole downtown ordinance deal. People get crammed together, and it creates more conflict between musicians. It creates more potential conflict with merchants who, under the old street performers guidelines, the voluntary street performers guidelines, they could just, if they wanted, walk out and say, you know, there's a kind of a street performers guidelines voluntary agreement in town. It's not law. You do whatever you want, so you don't have to pay any attention to me. But I'd appreciate it if, you know, you leave after an hour so I could kind of stop hearing that same damn tune again and again and again and again. And that, by all accounts, I've heard has pretty much worked, except where the police have decided, or you have some militant merchants like the Heinrichs of the Pacific Trading Company who insist on, or, you know, who don't want musicians outside their door at all. At least that was kind of the position they took with people like Cosmic Chris and others a couple years ago, when they pushed for the downtown ordinances, and then they pushed for even stricter than the downtown ordinances, and then they pushed for eliminating the railing in front of the Pacific Trading Company, which makes it, you know, illegal to sit down on that area, and actually makes it more difficult and awkward to sit down on the fenced sort of planter area around Pacific Trading Company, Rosie McCann's area down there on Pacific Avenue. So, yeah, I mean, I've noticed the Safe event seems to be very, it seems to be, first of all, attracting new musicians. It Safe has not seemed to be attracting a strong component of street performers who want to militantly meet and challenge the downtown ordinances, either legally or through protests, because musicians are pretty much, you know, kind of loners. A lot of them are loners. They want to make their own money, and if they get a good spot, they want to do their thing. There's some solidarity and some sympathy, but there's also a lot of contempt for musicians who don't play as well. Not necessarily a lot of contempt, but a certain amount of, you know, and those homeless panhandlers over there kind of, you know, cutting into the scene. There's this kind of unfortunate divide-and-conquer strategy, which is sort of, I think, maybe it's a little paranoid to say it's been consciously adopted by city authorities, but it's there as a kind of a motif. It becomes a part of the scene. You know, you don't want poor people messing up. Just like the businesses get paranoid about having homeless people on the street, so do other musicians. But one of the things I noticed about Safe, this at least the Safe event, number 19 may have the same thing when we do it on Wednesday, is that people join in. Drunks join in. old geezers pick up a guitar and join in. Kids join in. I mean, it's not like they have to sort of have a respectful distance and sit, stand back and watch. People actually just sort of jump on top of it. And these are people who you would normally, you know, you might want to send them to the wet camp and in the rainbow gathering, you know, that you might want to send them to the camp where the drunks go. And it's not largely a drunken scene either. Tell me more about it, though. You're there almost continuously when you're there. You've been going to every one of these events, you say.
Well, that's what's beautiful about it, is it's the people on the streets, and we are joining in. It's not a stage where you're separated as a performer and you're looked at the, you know, you get the accolades of being the great performer on stage. It's like we're all performers here. We're all a group of people enjoying music, singing along, just having a good time together, and we start to meet each other. And, you know, that's one thing. Meeting places are getting harder and harder to find in Santa Cruz, and we meet each other. We're getting to discover that we have a lot in common, even though we're all different. And it's really exciting, because there's poor people and people on the streets, and they're just like you and me. And you meet them, you talk to them, and you find out, you know, maybe they had a home and now they're in between or whatever. And I don't know, it just makes people more comfortable about each other. And I think that's one thing we need to find, is more things in common with each other and less of what differences. It's easy to see the differences, but when you get to know each other right away, you find we have similarities. And, you know, it's just a matter of gathering. So I think instead of protesting specifically, what we're doing is celebrating, and in that way, kind of protesting. We're putting in our word and saying what we want to say, and so in a sense we end up pushing our ideas across without doing it in a harsh way or like yelling or telling people what to do or anything, but kind of just saying, hey, we're here too. And right away that seems to bring out a good feeling, which I think we all want to feel good. We don't want to just listen to complaints all the time. I mean, there are problems, and we want to hear that. We can do that when we share with each other.
Yeah, there is actually a Huff table attached to the Safe event, which has, and there's an anti-war table. I mean, actually, this anti-war and Huff share the table. Big demonstration yesterday in San Francisco against the war, and I'm going to be talking a little bit about that. And hopefully, folks who are up at that protest will call in and talk about it as well, kind of direct experience. I've got a few stories off the internet I'm going to read. Also expecting a call, as I mentioned, from Tad, the Arcata activist. But Valerie, the reason you were invited to the studio, as well as giving us a commentary, which I much appreciate, is you have a guitar, and you're not afraid to use it, as KSCO so
no,
obnoxiously repeats endlessly on its AM station. That's 1080 KSCO, folks, for those of you. I'm not afraid to give an alternate station's logo, though I was actually cut off the air on KSCO for mentioning Free Radio Santa Cruz. They don't like the competition, see, which is, it's kind of interesting. I mean, Free Radio Santa Cruz, a 30-watt station, you know, harassed by the FCC with a you know, a range that's actually about half what it used to be, a danger? I think not. It shows you the kind of greedy or paranoid perspective that these large radio stations have, and it's sort of sad. I like Michael Zwirling as the head of the KSCO, but... I don't like what he does often. Anyway, You got your guitar with you. Are you ready to roll with one of your tunes here?
Well, sure. I really feel a lot of sympathy for the street people. I think that's what I'm saying about having Huff. My main reason was to get involved with Huff and then Safe from there, which was a little more my bent because I'm not homeless, but I am into performing, was really to support the homeless. So I wrote a couple of songs about just that we're all people, and what if you ended up on the street? It'll get a feeling about what it's like to be on the street. We could all be there. That's like people say, we're one paycheck away from it. So yeah, I have a song about a man. You know, how many people have you seen on the street with cardboard signs? What if you were sitting there? You could be. So imagine that. This is called How Could It Be? I saw a man with a cardboard sign. He had a couple of hard luck days. He stands in the free soup line. He could use a coin. He could use a smile. But nobody cares, 'cause he is a bum. Oh, how could it be that I'm sitting here with this cardboard sign? How could it be that I should appear like I'm nobody, nobody at all? There were times when he had fun, but life isn't easy. Yeah, he had a girl, more than one, who said he was great. Now he could use just one, who says he's not a bum. Ah, someone who remembers him when, well, those were the days. Ah, how could it be that I'm sitting here with this cardboard sign? How could it be that I should appear like I'm nobody, nobody at all? Though he filled out a welfare form, but he has no address. They say all of these bums are a norm, and his friends could care less. His friends haven't the room or the time. Now they're saying that sleeping's a crime if you do it outdoors. Now he's a criminal now, and he'd like to know how. Oh, how could I get in this mess? How could it be that I'm sitting here with this cardboard sign? How could it be that I should appear like I'm nobody, nobody at all? Nobody at all, no, I'm somebody, nobody at all. Hard luck days. Now he sits and stands in the free soup line. He could use a coin. He could use a smile. Ah, but nobody cares, 'cause he is a bum. How could it be that I'm sitting here with this cardboard sign? How could it be that I should appear like I'm nobody, nobody at all?
Nice. That's called How Can It Be? And that's Valerie Christie here in the studio live singing one of her songs. You can actually hear her on Wednesday night, 6 to 9, on the sidewalks in front of New Leaf Market. You have your first CD coming out soon, do you?
Ha, ha, ha. I don't think I'm rich enough for that. Maybe one day when I'm not one of the many poor people in Santa Cruz.
You have another profession, right? That you're not a professional musician, and you actually live indoors, right?
Yes, I do. I actually serve people. I'm spending time helping the elderly in their homes. I make very little money, but I'm not worried about that. The important thing is that I'm helping other people, and I feel really supported by the community because I'm supporting them. So I'm making it, but the important thing, I think, in life is to do what you enjoy than to worry about money. So
sounds pretty hippie-esque to me, kiddo.
Well, you know, I think it's a happier experience, that's for sure.
Well, if you have any reactions to any of this, of course, or you want to comment on anything you've heard so far, it's 42... say it publicly, and it's on the subject and has to do with my show. You can call me at 423-HUFF. I mentioned that number before, 423-4833. It's also a good number to call if you want to get involved with Huff and Puff. Huff and Puff is a developing project to provide medical marijuana, make it more accessible to people who now can't afford it, and also just generally to the public in Santa Cruz, because there's zoning restrictions under the 2000 City Council concocted medical marijuana law, which essentially has prohibited, in effect, any distribution centers, any cannabis clubs in town. And that's something that some of us, if we tried to talk to council members, we tried to talk to Christopher Crone when he was mayor, tried to talk to Mike Rotkin when he was mayor. Rotkin made some promises which he's not fulfilled last November. It's just not being, you know, he's not, and the other city council members are not returning their calls on this issue, and they're not responding to it that I've heard of. So, and the other sad thing is that the main activists in this community are kind of tired. I mean, they're working on a lot of issues. The activists on medical marijuana activists. I mean, they're working on things like expanding the permissible amounts of marijuana that you can grow or that you can have if you're a medical marijuana patient, which is a good idea. There's a state law, SB 420, which is limited those amounts to unreasonably small amounts, but it does allow counties to expand them, and Andrea Tischler of the Compassion Flower Inn, who's been working on this issue for a decade or more, has talked on the radio about how she went to the supervisors, the Board of Supervisors, that's the county legislative body, last Tuesday, I guess it was, maybe it was the Tuesday before, and she was fighting CAMP, which is the spray the marijuana, surveil them from the air, go in and get them, spend lots of police money and time, and terror against people who are growing marijuana, which is perverse, to say the least. Anyway, she's also concerned, however, with getting these higher guidelines put in so that people can grow 99 plants. No, it's have, I think it's have 6 pounds or 99, is it 99 square feet or 99 plants? I'm not sure, but certainly an expanded definition of the medical marijuana guidelines that here in Santa Cruz. I think she's looking at the Sonoma or the Mendocino guidelines. And that effort has been joined by the Corrals, who had WAM, the only really functioning medical marijuana group, but the problem is they are a closed cooperative and collective, and they're all filled up, 250 to 300 people, and the demand is for 2 to 3,000, according to former cannabis club co-owner Kate Wells, who's now kind of researching how to do stuff to reopen cannabis clubs. I mean, she's not, I don't think she has the funding or the energy to do it herself, but she's trying to clear the way. She's been advising some of us on the Huff and Puff Project about our legal rights and responsibilities, and also trying to clarify what the City Council's law of 2000, passed by Fitzmaurice and Rotkin on the City Council, allows and does not allow. So, I mean, right now, if you want medical marijuana in Santa Cruz, you either have to be one of the 250, 300 Lucky Wham members, you have to go out of town to Oakland, San Francisco, cannabis clubs, or to Jim Losey's free medical marijuana giveaway in San Jose, which actually had one on April 20th for 20 medical marijuana giveaway, and he's going to be the person who's going to be involved in providing the marijuana for this current giveaway. He's a medical marijuana provider for patients. And it's coming up. We were scheduling it for mid-June, but it's slower than we thought. Some of the original distributors who were going to be helpful kind of withdrew. And that's, I've mentioned this on past shows, it depresses me that activists who were previously involved have chosen not to be involved. I've heard various excuses, but I don't see any good reasons except, there are some good reasons. People have personal health problems, and they have personal commitments, and they're concerned about being arrested, or they're concerned about losing their cachet with the local authorities, and that sort of thing. But the authorities are not interested in moving on this issue. They have not moved in 4 years. Unless we do something to make them move, they won't move. That's my belief. So we're proceeding. And if you are a person who wants to get medical marijuana, even if you don't have a doctor's recommendation, maybe we can try to advise you as to how to get one. It's hard to do, and that's another one of the problems. Doctors charge a lot for these. They overcharge, and you can sometimes get them through established Medi-Cal-type, Emmeline Street authorities. The stories kind of go both ways. You know, we need to be demonstrating at those buildings, too, to make sure that poor people have access to these medications. It's more than just a matter of equal justice. It's more than a matter of your right to put in your own body what you want to put in. It also has to do, it's actually kind of a survival issue, too, because people who do not have access to the more benign medications and helpful medications are forced to rely on more dangerous stuff. It's pumped out by pharmaceutical companies and doctors, like candy bars, because it serves the profit motive, and it's sort of like psychotropic drugs, which I won't get started on at this time. Anyway, Valerie, you got any comments on any of this?
I've also been helping with the Huff table that when you have your show on Thursday night, where we set out Huff things in your radio, people can on the streets can hear your station and your show. And there was a man who came up last Thursday, and he was saying, yeah, I don't have the money for a card, and how do I get a card? I'm on the street, and he says, I really need it. And I felt really awful because I didn't have any answer for him. And, I just wanted to hand him marijuana right then and there, and there was nothing I could do. So it's very frustrating, all this legal crazy stuff, when people really could use it. And I think I really support what you're doing and trying to make an effort to find an answer. I just hope there is one. Just hope there's more people out there who want to get involved and come up with some ideas and help support this. It's very important.
Yeah. Well, there's medical marijuana. I mean, we have a supplier for medical marijuana. If you want to be involved and you are a patient or a potential patient, you should give a call to the Huff line at 423-HUFF, and then I'll get back to you, and we'll put you through to Jim Losey. We'll have to check credentials and things like that, because this is to make sure that we can actually do this without being hauled away without, recourse. But there's always a chance we'll get hauled away anyway, I suppose, but that's fine. I mean, if we get hauled away and we're acting legally, although frankly I agree with you, Valerie, I think we should simply give out marijuana, period.
Yeah.
I mean, I think frankly that's, it is an extremely unhealthy situation we're in the middle of in this 21st century, 5 years into the new millennium, and we still have 700,000 people in jail this year for smoking marijuana or possessing marijuana or selling or cultivating or trading or dealing or buying marijuana. It's just, it doesn't really need to be further discussed. I mean, we can go further and talk about the same thing is true with other harder drugs, heroin, cocaine, methamphetamines. The medical solution to this situation insofar, it's probably, it's part of this problem lies in how people are deformed in society. I suppose if you're of a conservative bent, you believe it lies in original sin. Whatever you think, whatever it comes from, nonetheless, the way to treat it is not to lock people up and turn them into not lifelong state charges or criminals when suddenly the budget busts and they have to let everybody out.
Well, they might be terrorists, so I guess they're, with Bush around, I guess we have to expect a lot of paranoia.
Well, they do have a serve a useful function. I mean, there is a way of, we can hone our interrogation techniques on these prisoners, and apparently that's what happened over in Iraq with Abu Ghraib, where the guys who were running the prisons were these hard-nosed, hard-asses from the prison system who were doing the hard approach in the U.S., and they were sent over to do the same thing with people scooped off the street by American troops as they marched in and paraded around and secured all the oil wells and set up the puppet government and so forth. So, Huff and Puff, call 423-HUFF if you're interested, and if you want to be a part of it, or if you want more information about it. I'm going to play a little number now from another one of the safe performers. This is Tom Donnelly, who is a man who's very versatile. He plays the ukulele, he plays, what else does he play? He plays the flute?
Saxophone, what else,
I think he has a variety of instruments. He also, he does some great novelty imitations and songs. He knows dozens, probably hundreds of songs. We also played him last time, his famous Turtles in the Oven I was playing, which is one of the milder songs. He's too far out for me, man, I gotta tell you. But here's one of his songs from an album, a CD he's put out, which is called... let's see, let me take a look at it. It is called Henna Tanuki. So I think this has to do with his Japanese approach. So here we have...
Wanna get the Morioka, tell you what to do, gotta hop on the shing to old Tohoku. Get off at the Eki Head Underground, walk on through the tunnel just to follow in the sound. Street musician. No audience. Just killing time. I love Odori on a Friday night, them Ganguro girls are way out of sight. 10 pounds of makeup, platform shoes, hot pink miniskirts, give me the blues, that's okay. I don't mind. They're probably only 15 years old, anywho. It's hard to be a jet in Iwate after bumming around North America. Work like a dog, put on a tie, learn another language, go to Enkai's. Kampai! Sake! Watch your bosses and neighbors all get slobbering drunk. Sansa Odori is a hell of a blast, 20,000 drummers dancing on past, odd time rhythms like 39 beats, crazy costumes going down the street, tie-dyed kimonos, Texas cowboys, men in white tutus with swans' heads growing out of their crotches. Sakura cho iwayase! The Hanamaki Matsuri is loads of fun, but then Omikoshi's got to weigh a ton. Lugging them shrines from one side to the next, yeah, think they'd all get broken necks. Washoi! Golden peacocks, groups of 40 people, trying not to stumble into each other. I love Japanese convenience stores. The girls are so ginky when you walk in the door. Shopping there really seems to make the day. I think Lawson's boot camp made him that way. Yarashaimase! Domo arigatou gozaimashita! I honor you, I worship you, I kiss your feet, serving you in the holy phrases. I love you, have a nice day, come back soon now, here!
And that was... Tom Donnelly, and he does these parodies, and I guess that's a parody of a talkin' something blues. He calls it Talkin' Tohoku. On the line with us, we have that inestimably active activist from Arcata, the infamous Tad, and I think he has got someone with him. Hi, Tad.
Hi, Robert.
How's everybody? You got some one of your cronies hanging out there?
Oh, I wouldn't call him a crony. He's one of the organizers here.
Oh, and who is that?
How are you guys doing?
What you got with you?
This is Oz.
Hi, Oz.
Hello.
And what's happening in Arcata? Sunny weather, lots of police out there on the beat making sure that homeless people aren't sleeping?
We have a lot of camping tickets issued, quite a few trespassing tickets. So, there's a lot of police activity. A lot of activity on the square from 9 to 5.
No. Oz, you yourself are outside, or?
I'm currently outside, yeah. I've been an advocate for houseless issues for about over 10 years.
And were you part of the South Spit Jetty folks?
No, I got information about that, but I was in Chicago at that time.
How long you been in Arcata?
Since early this spring.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
And so you were around when, this spring being 2004?
Right.
Okay, so you weren't around when Tad was arrested in the protests last year in March and July?
No, the only information I was through the media that I got.
Uh-huh.
That's all I...
Well, what lured you to Arcata?
Well, the North Coast, generally, I've been in contact with people out here that... are working on houseless issues. The situation with the current administration that proposes to give federal money to church, civic organizations to feed people, and then they're kind of assessing what's happening as they're finding out with the federal money there's so many strings attached.
This is the faith-based stuff, or is this...
Right, the faith-based stuff
uh-huh.
and community-based stuff is... they're able to get increased amounts of grants, too. So the federal government is pretty much taking over the Feeding the Poor programs through these private organizations.
But not taking over Food Not Bombs, I hope.
Not that.
Right.
They don't accept federal money.
Right. Well, actually, here in Santa Cruz, we have a number of groups that give food. And I don't think any, even the religious groups here accept federal money, though I haven't checked with Don Adams, who feeds here on the streets of Santa Cruz Wednesday nights right after the SAFE event up the street in front of the Cooper House area, for those of you who are listening in Santa Cruz. I'm going to both be talking to you, Oz, Tad, and also talking to the community. Kind of forgive me if I keep leaping back and forth. In the studio with us, by the way, we have Valerie, who's playing some songs for us. She is one of the regulars at the Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, the SAFE event, which is a Take Back the Streets for musicians, performers, and people generally. Happens every Wednesday down here. But, yeah, I'm thinking about it. We have a lot of people who... There isn't a lot of food all the time on the streets, but there are some groups that provide food. Food Not Bombs is one. Joe Schultz provides food for Huff, and we provide food. Cop Watch has been kind of helpful in that regard. We had some private... Shannon of Huff has given food. There's a lot of folks who've cooperated with that. And there's some regular programs, I imagine, do get federal funding. And you're saying there's an impact... Up in Arcata, what's the impact on poor people up there? Are there some current changes or what?
Well, with this new federal funding, and Arcata is a small community, and there's only one source for food and services. Currently, what's happening is the feeding or the food end of it is shrinking. Well, more and more dollars and are going to case management.
So you can eat as long as you fit, you're the right shape peg to fit into the right hole, and you're providing the right job for the right middle class person, that sort of thing.
That's correct. In addition, if you're service resistant, in other words, you're not in case management, you just want to eat, you want to take a shower and maintain your daily needs, and then you're doing other things, looking for work on your own or whatever, or you have mental, physical impairments, you find yourself being more and more squeezed. In other words, if you're caught smoking on the plaza, for instance, someone can turn you in. You're denied food for 30 days for your first offense. That's more severe than any...
Wait a minute. Is this is just a new policy adopted by the food program?
Yes, it is.
So if you are, I mean, if you're given, if you're caught smoking, or if you're given a ticket by a police officer?
No, you can be by one of the Endeavor volunteers, by any citizen who wants to call and report you to the Endeavor.
Is it just for smoking, or is it for other things too?
It's for any ticket you might receive for camping, for smoking.
So you can eat, but you better not sleep, huh?
You better not sleep, and you better keep moving.
People in houses are facing sort of a similar dilemma. You can either eat or you can pay your rent. You know, don't try to do both. You know?
Exactly. In our protest, we had a sign. We protest in front of the city hall, each city council meeting. We had a sign that says, houseless people being harassed means you're next. In other words, it goes up the food chain.
Right,
and we're looking for those things where people marginalized with they're currently paying rent, but they can't pay for their medicine or their medical services or food. They're the next group, and then it just goes on up from there. And we're seeing it as a national policy to squeeze the poor, and it's an insidious one because when they have a monopoly on all the services, and this is a trend that we're going to see happen over the next few months, and that's what we're resisting, this trend to say, well, the community has taken care of it, we're getting federal dollars, so everything's fine. Everything's actually worse.
Huh. You know, it's interesting. I regard this as a very ominous sign for kind of a related reason, and that is that... When these criteria are set up that you have to be, you know, in a quote program or you're service resistant, this is a fantasy that is used to lure service providers into doing police work. It's a fantasy that's used to kind of lull the public into believing, like in places like San Francisco, where they're going after people in public places, saying, "See, we got rooms for you. We got compassion, not cash, or care, not cash program," which Mayor Gavin Newsom came to power on. We're really doing something for homeless people. You know, their real problem is they're mentally disturbed, bum, wino types who just need to be forced to, you know, take the kinds of treatment that will help them out, whatever that treatment is. But in fact, what's happening here is they're saying that if you don't take the services, then we come down with the club.
That's exactly right.
And it's being done in a number of ways. It's being done in the soft version in San Francisco, where they make a big publicity event out of sending out so-called service providers for services that are really non-existent. They haven't expanded the services significantly at all, and nor made them homeless-friendly or homeless-run or with homeless input, or that even meet homeless needs. But instead, they make the... give the community the impression something's being done, so that when the next week they see the cops coming and dragging people away, they'll say, "Oh, well, they had a chance to go voluntarily."
Mm-hmm.
Does that cover some of what they're doing in Arcata at all, or am I being too paranoid?
Well, what you're seeing there is what is coming here. It's just a matter of time until they can get the coordination of activities and the people together, and they're doing it through the city councils in connection with the grant writers and the food service providers to link arms as never before. It's supposed to be a united community effort. What it is, it's a united federal administration policy passed down, and people are biting the bullet locally. Either they're for it or they're opposed to it. There's not much middle ground here. And I think the big thing is, right now, people don't currently understand the change in the policies and the change in the intent. In other words, the intent is to make homelessness illegal in any way possible. Just for being homeless, no other reason. That's the whole thrust of it.
Now, Arcata is... sorry, I'm a little bit loud here. Arcata is a... hang on a second, I'm getting a little problems with the levels in the studio. Let me listen in here. Let's see, yeah, I'm sounding awfully loud. And unfortunately, it has to do with the... could have to do with the monitoring system. It could have to do with some problem with the phone. Turning down the phone a little. Can you still hear me?
I can still hear you.
Okay.
I can still hear you.
Arcata is a town of about, 25,000?
About 20,000. Our population is 19,600, something like that.
You're 10 or 20 miles north of Eureka.
Right.
About 30 or 50, 60 miles south of the Oregon border or something?
A little more than that, but yeah, we're about halfway, a little more than halfway between San Francisco and the Oregon border. I mean, we're kind of isolated as a county. We're a very impoverished county, always have been. And, you know, the jobs just aren't here. And one of the things we keep pointing out to them is we have more unemployment in this country than during the Great Depression, but we have zero shanty towns. Well, now we have Dignity Village, so we have the first one. But, you know, during the Great Depression, they had them in every city. Now we have zero, and we have worse unemployment and worse homelessness than we've had back in the 30s.
Now, that's a stat that a lot of people would challenge because, of course, you look at the figures coming out of the administration in the last couple of weeks, and the pundits, the middle-of-the-road pundits are saying, you know, Bush's problems are, you know, he's got the war, you know, even though the economy is improving. I don't think...
Well, what the proponents, they tell you that if you read the articles, but if you just read the headlines, you think that unemployment is getting better, but then you read that they took 250,000 off. You know, we have 1.9 million people a year joining the workforce for the first time. They don't count those people on the unemployment list. We have people who have stopped using the unemployment offices, so they're taken off the list. If you're not actively looking for a job through a government office, then you're not considered on the unemployment list. Homeless people that have given up, but they would go to work in a second if you offered them a job. You know, those people are unemployed looking for work. And then there's all the second jobs that the families need. You know, people that are making minimum wage need to work 2, 3, 4 jobs in order to make their bills, and they're all competing for work. And, you know, I mean, they can crank their numbers because that's what they do. I mean, that's what our director of our local service center does, is she fudges numbers and fudges facts to justify her cause. But, I mean, they can't hide what the truth is. You just need to get out a calculator and see what they're doing.
I mean, I'd like to see a report that, I guess I find it hard to believe that the unemployment figures are worse than the Great Depression. That sounds to me, that goes counter to, you know, the propaganda I've been led to believe. And, you know, if I've been duped, I'd love to hear it. So maybe you can send us the stats.
I can show you where to get all the government numbers on. You know, then that's the thing, is once you're off the unemployment numbers, the Reagan administration, we all know about that, that they changed the way they counted the unemployment so they could lower the unemployment numbers. But then you realize that everybody, you know, Bush has lost almost 3 million jobs since he's been in office. A lot of those people were, the reason the unemployment rate didn't shoot up is because as those people were hitting the unemployment numbers, benefits were running out for other people, and they were they're taken off the unemployment numbers. Once your benefits run out, they consider you just not looking for a job anymore.
Well, of course. Turning back to Arcata, and do send me some of the stats on that. I got a disc from you that I didn't quite understand. I'll talk to you more about that off air, I guess. I know you've been writing I presume you're still writing regularly now for the weekly, the Arcata Eye.
No, I just gave up. It was too frustrating having to work with him. I mean,
the editor.
Yeah, he all of a sudden got this crunch it down, shove it in, put it in the back page type attitude, and you know, I mean, he embarrassed himself in public and basically tried to get out of it by giving me a column, and then, you know, he immediately started being his same old self again.
So you had a column for a couple of weeks, and then it was pulled out from you?
Yeah, I mean, he got to where he wouldn't run a story, and then he said, well, chop it down, and it's like, well, I'm sorry, that story has already been printed elsewhere, so, you know, if I chop it down, then people will wonder what the contradiction is, why it got to...
abbreviated version. Yeah. Well, I mean, I know I'm often asked to edit my stories for space, and I don't like doing it, but I put out the longer version of my story on the internet or
right.
On the Huff website. And by the way, for those who want to check out the Huff website, it's www.huff, Huff, Santa Cruz, one word, small letters, huffsantacruz.com. org. It's not very up to date, but it's got some interesting history on it, and we're hoping to actually start archiving audio. These shows, we're hoping that we're going to start archiving on the air in case you miss the show, and while it's being played, you can actually hear it then at a later time just by going to the internet. But I'm sorry, you were saying that you had, what, two columns in the Arcata Eye, and then suddenly...
No, actually, I had one, and then he never printed the other one and came back to me a couple months later and said, or a month later and said, well, you shorten this one down and we'll print it, and it's like, well, why don't I just send you another one, because this one's already been printed in its long version, and we'll get it. But I don't like the fact that this, he makes the issue about me, okay? And it's not about me. It really matters little as to what happens to one individual. This is about an overall trend. We have the local care provider put out a note saying that if our staff saw you breaking laws, then without a ticket, without an arrest, without a trial, without a jury, without a conviction, without anything, we will immediately sentence you to 30 days with no food.
Now, do you got any attorneys who are willing to challenge that as a legal matter, or are we in a situation where, since it's a semi-private, faith-based thing, that there's, if government funding is involved, there have to be some kind of safeguards in terms of your legal protection. So in theory, you should be able to challenge such administrative regulation.
Well, yeah. In theory, I think we, actually, we have lawyers that are really, really interested in this, and they want us to, I mean, we video interviews with people who get kicked out. We've got their letters of intent and policy letters, so the lawyers want to see all this. So it's just started happening. This is a policy they tried to put in place. We wouldn't talk to them, told them that we wouldn't stand for it, that this is, you know, people, regardless of who they are, have the right to eat. I mean, even a murderer convicted to death row until he gets killed has a right to eat, and this is just meanness at it. You know, these are supposed homeless advocates out there telling the people that the homeless people deserve this kind of treatment.
Mm-hmm. What do national homeless civil rights organizations like the National Coalition for the Homeless say about this? Have you been in touch with Michael Stoops? Or
No, I haven't. We haven't really taken this out of, this is fact actually the first public comment, because there's a little bit of trepidation we have about attacking the service center. You know, what happens if they close the service center, and then they'll point the finger at us and say, well, they closed it, and so you guys are starving. But the problem is Food Not Bombs has to go through this service center to get their food, because
why
they
so?
Have a monopoly on all the grocery stores.
That's really crippling for Food Not Bombs. I know that when the Downtown Association in Santa Cruz wanted to run Food Not Bombs out, they started pressuring when New Leaf Market stopped giving them food and other groups stopped giving them food. This was 5 or 10 years ago. I don't know what their current status is. That's one of my beefs with the local New Leaf Market, stems back from there, as well as from there, where they've more recently harassed people in the parking lot up in Felton, signature gatherers, and joined in to try to, you know, they said nothing when the area in front of their store was fenced off as part of a get rid of the homeless plan. So I'm not, I have my other problems with New Leaf, but it's been a kind of a, Food Not Bombs has preserved its independence in Santa Cruz by going out and getting food independently of these clowns. And you say that they can't do it up there in Arcata?
It's just going to take a lot more organization. We have to go talk face-to-face with people. We have a whole bunch of organic farmers up here. We're pushing through a GNO referendum for the County of Humboldt, like Mendocino did last election. So we'll have a referendum to make Humboldt County a GMO-free people. So these people are fairly hip to the saving the earth, and so if we can get face-to-face conversations, we can probably convince a lot of the organic farmers to help us. But the problem right now is that all the grocery stores lock their dumpsters, and what they don't want to throw in the send to the landfill, or what's too expensive for them to send to the landfill, they give to this homeless service center, and the homeless service center takes it, and then Food Not Bombs comes by, and they say, well, here's what we have left. You can take this and cook for this. Your thing.
Anything to do is start doing direct boycotts of grocery stores that lock their dumpsters and that are refusing to give food to programs that actually serve the homeless without discrimination.
Well, that's definitely coming. Like I say, this is new development. This is something that they threatened, and we backed them down, and they threatened, and we backed them down, and they finally came out. I mean, the business owners and the director of the service center and the chief of police are all having meetings.
Hey, they're having meetings, guys. Let's all be very hopeful.
Well, they had a meeting last week, which we protested out in front of, and we sent several homeless people in on how to make citizens arrest against the homeless.
Oh, right.
And it's really weird because I think the police officer, I mean, we went to a friend of ours who's a forest defender who were trying to make a citizen's arrest against the big lumber company executive here in Arcata. So they studied the citizen's arrest laws very, very in depth. And we believe from talking to these people that the stuff that the chief of police told these business owners is a flat out and out lie.
How are they distorting it? I mean, first of all, you mean you were able to get into the meeting?
Yeah, oh yeah, they let us in. We had cameras, we had protesters. They had it at noon, so it was right in the middle of the day.
How many people were protesting?
We had about 20 people protesting, and then about 5 or 6 of us went inside, and when we came back out, we had another 20 people out there protesting. So.
And so, and did you video the proceedings inside?
We did, but. We had I don't know if we taped over it or if we just misplaced the tape. I think
that happens to me a lot.
I remember having it in a pocket.
So you said there were some errors that they proposed. We actually, as I mentioned to you in a prior show, we've tried I proposed the citizen's arrest approach for people down here to counter by arresting tourists. So that if the police start arresting homeless people, the homeless people respond by filing citizen's arrest against tourists for doing the same thing.
Well, one of the things they told the tourists is that you just need to call the police department, tell us what happened, and we'll go, you fill out some papers, we'll go make an arrest, and then you're done. And
that's not true.
It's not true.
They have to appear in court.
They are now the arresting officer.
That's correct. They make the citizen's arrest. The police officer for an infraction, I guess you can make a police officer doesn't have to be present for a felony.
Right.
And I don't know, maybe misdemeanor.
No, a misdemeanor has to happen in the presence of a police officer or the arresting officer, which is the citizen and under a citizen's arrest.
Or you have to have probable cause to believe and get an arrest warrant from a judge. Yeah, that's the old rules. You know, we're moving into a new era now. We have the Patriot Act and other similar federal legislation that will help us pick up these terrorist homeless people without this kind of legal falderal.
Right.
So it sounds like you have a serious homeless activist movement up there. Do you have like weekly meetings of your homeless group, or how does that work?
Well, we have.
You just call a protest and people come to.
We call our board of directors, our council of elders, and we meet sometimes. It depends on what's going on. We're meeting 2 or 3 times a day now, and then we have the regular members that we meet with periodically as things are going on.
I know that
we do have some ballot initiatives that we're going to try to get on the local Arcata.
I talked to Dave Meserve last week on the air. He mentioned you had 5 or something?
We have 4, or we have 3, the Houses Coalition, but all total there's 4 other ones, which could make 7.
Uh-huh. You want to tell us about them briefly?
Yeah, the 3 we're doing is we're redoing the camping law to where the city council can make emergency measures to allow camping much easier than it's now set in place. We're trying to revamp the no-sitting law to where it's not a law against sitting, it's a law against blocking sidewalks and blocking entrances and things like that. We're trying to rewrite the no-dogs in the downtown area so that, we're still leaving their square dog-free, but we're changing. I mean, people go shopping in this town with their dogs all the time. It's just the homeless people that get nailed on it.
Do any of the four other council measures relate to homeless people that are being proposed by other people? Or?
I believe ultimately they all do. I mean, one is to reform the city council, put term limits on it, to make the mayor elected by the public. One of them is a citizens police review board that we don't have up here now that we want in place. And one of them is for the medical marijuana guidelines. Our DA had set medical marijuana guidelines, but then when they tried to recall them, he immediately just dumped it to the state guidelines, the state minimum guidelines.
So he got scared because of the recall movement?
Right. They said he was soft on crime. And so he immediately just dropped his stance on marijuana, which he researched. I mean, this man went out and researched this thoroughly before he did it.
What's his name?
That they were.
What's his name, Ted?
Paul Gallegos.
I thought he was the big hero up there that all the lefties were supporting, but he sort of cut and ran anyway on that issue.
Yeah, he ran on that issue. He certainly has been letting us down on this houseless issue. I mean, houseless people are segregated. If you're medical marijuana and you're homeless, you're going to be arrested just as much as if you're not, or maybe more, because they don't really arrest people in houses for marijuana anymore. It's just mostly the kids, you know, the people that don't have houses that they catch sitting out in the field, or they catch them hiding in the tree or wherever, you know, they catch them. But they're basically the only people prosecuted for these crimes anymore. But the 215 guidelines are something that that Arcata will support.
Now, are homeless people going to these council meetings? We have a council meeting coming up on Tuesday that I'm going to be...
Well, we protest out in front of them every week.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is the city has been long-winded the last couple of months, and all their meetings are getting over really late. There's a bunch of things that the activists in town, like we had a big fluoride issue at the last city council meeting that, you know, had 100 people come to talk about. So by the time the open forum gets, we really were down to just a couple of homeless people in the audience and probably very few people watching on TV anymore and everything else.
My article about you and your struggle in Arcata has been published in the last Street Spirit, which I guess has made it up to Arcata, right?
Yes.
And I know you've been trying to form some contacts with other organizations like Street Sheet and the San Francisco groups. And I know Eugene, of course, has a homeless struggle as well as Portland. You've been up to Dignity Village up there. Anybody from out of town coming through and providing support kind of on a roving basis? I know the IWW used to run around the country supporting free speech fights at the beginning of the last century when there was attacks on poor people.
We're meeting people
free speech.
That have worked with these other groups here and there. You know, the problem with the homeless movement is that all their tactics are designed to move the homeless on, to, you know, move them to the next town or next state or whatever. So, you know, we get a lot of people that come in and get with us, and then they go, and then somebody else comes back. So we're meeting people that have worked with these groups, but as far as direct people coming down and walking in and saying, "Hi, I'm from, you know, I'm Jack from Dignity Village," we just haven't had that yet. But,
so, yeah, I know it sounds like you say you're meeting three times a day, and what's a typical meeting? You have an office on the right on the square where a lot of the police activity takes place, and homeless people
right.
are
we're right off
they're
the
boating.
Square. We're trying to, you know, we've decided that we needed to set up a police watch, so we've got a cop watch going, and so we meet on that. Wednesday we had both the protest over the meeting with the police and the service center director and the business owners. Then we had another protest that night because it was city council night. So, you know, we just get busy and we have several meetings to organize and plan these actions.
And how many people come to an average meeting?
Do what?
How many people come to an average meeting?
It depends. There's usually a group of 10 or 15 that are focusing on one particular event. We need to do more of them. We try not to have too many open meetings because, bless their hearts, I understand they want to, you know, complain and bitch to somebody, but the truth of the matter is we already know this. You know, we need to get on past the complaining and the telling how bad they're treating each individual person and get on to a group and decide what we can do about it. So when you have the big general meetings of all the members, they just really turn into big gripe sessions.
Mm-hmm. So, but it sounds like you've gotten some active things done. You've videoed and forced meetings with police and merchants to be open, the one about the citizen's arrest. You've been regularly to city council meetings, protesting and speaking up, even occasionally when you fall asleep because of exhaustion, waiting for the council agendas to end. You know, you've videotaped police incidents on the plaza square. And, of course, you've gotten these three initiatives rolling. How's that going? Are you finding people signing up for it? Or are you?
We're still waiting for them to get back from the city attorney's office. There's a process that city attorney... We're going to be gathering signatures from the 8th of June through the 24th of June, and then we have to turn them back in by then in order to give them the you know, do the city attorney thing again, validate the signatures, and have it on the ballot within 88 days of the election. So we're kind of in a time crunch. But
how many signatures do you need?
We need 1,200. You know, it's
1,200 in 12 days.
10% of the last election.
And actually, it's in 16 days.
Do what?
You need 1,200 signatures in 16 days.
Right.
That's a lot of signatures.
Well, that's the beauty of it is there's three different organizations that put referendums on, and we are all going to help each other gather signatures.
That's great.
So if I go out and get 100 signatures, then I can get 100 signatures on theirs, and they'll be out getting 100 signatures on mine. So we're hoping that this is a very politically active community. The Republicans are the third party here, for instance. So we have we hope we'll have enough help and enough people, and we certainly think that we can attract the 1,200 signatures. Plus, we're also doing, you know, one of the typical things is homeless people don't believe they have a voice in their own local government, and so they typically don't register and don't vote. And so we have we've been talking to them about how, yes, that may be true when you voted for president in 2000, but it's not necessarily true when you vote on an initiative in your town. We're hoping to.
Well, I think you. I mean, you have a right to register. You don't even need to have a permanent place of.
Right.
You just have to state a place of residence. It could be a grate. It can be a tree. It can be as long as it's a place.
Right.
And as long as you're not having more than one place, and as long as you intend to make that your. I think you have to have resided there for what, 30 days or something. I mean, made it your residence. Doesn't mean you have to pay rent there. Doesn't mean you have to prove that's your place. You just have to not duplicate it, not do the
right.
I've got a home in Texas and in Washington deal.
But the problem is typically it's just apathy. People on the bottom, I mean, the courts don't treat them fair. The police don't treat them fair. The jails don't treat them fair. Even the service providers don't treat them fair, and they just feel disenfranchised and don't believe the election process treats them fair. But we're saying when you act locally, the election process can't help but treat you fair because, you know, it's such a small number of people that that make these decisions.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about that, but I think it's a good idea to mobilize people. I mean, a lot of people down here start shouting, "Election is panacea." The problem often is that when candidates, you've got nobody to vote for. I mean, Green Party candidates, you get Bob Anilis as your mayor, and he's anti-homeless, even though the Green Party platform bars such behavior by Green Party, you know, and it contravenes the Green Party platform. But initiatives are a good, you know, the kind of thing that's the reason to go to the polls, to vote for an initiative.
Right. And that's certainly what our whole campaign is about. We don't need the government. We don't need these.